Are you looking for your next great read, but stumped on where to find it? Let me be your book fairy godmother. When you join Rhonda with a Book on Patreon for $5 a month, I will send you a personalized book recommendation, plus my All Things Bookish newsletter every month, and give you a shout out and plug your project here on the podcast. If you're on a budget, no worries. For only a dollar a month, you can get just the newsletter, which includes exclusive content not found on the blog, and a collection of links to articles, stories, and products book nerds will love, curated by yours truly. Go to patreon.com/rondawithabook to join. Thanks so much for your support, and as always, happy reading. Good day, friends, and welcome to the Rhonda with a Book podcast, where I, Rhonda, spill the tea on books. Not literally, of course. So, I'm back after a much-needed break, and I have some fun content planned for the rest of October, here on the podcast and on the blog. This week, I am revisiting a piece that I wrote back in June of this year, and that was published by Book Riot during my brief stint as a contributor there. I started thinking about this piece because my other more quote-unquote official podcast, Pop DNA, is planning our first annual Film Awards bonus episode. And one of the categories that we are asking listeners to vote on is Best Literary Adaptation. The movies that we selected for this category cover a wide range of adaptation types or philosophies. I've had conversations with people who didn't like some of these nominated adaptations because of the adaptation style, which I find very interesting. I have also recently watched a couple of literary adaptations that I thought were very well done, though they weren't what some more traditionalist adaptation fans would deem as quote-unquote accurate to their source material. The practice of calling an adaptation accurate as a measure of its quality, by the way, really rankles me, probably more than it should. But accurate to what? The plot points of the work that it's based on? That's all well and good if that's important to you, but that's not the only measure that matters. But I digress. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we will dive deep into four different types of literary adaptations, and we will attempt to answer the question, what do we want in a literary adaptation? See you soon. And we're back. Hello. And now, what do we want in a literary adaptation? For almost as long as film has been around as an art form, books have been adapted for film. In fact, the earliest known motion picture based on a literary source was filmed in 1896. It's a 45-second scene from George du Maurier's 1894 novel Trilby, if you must know. And for just as long as books have been adapted for the screen, book lovers have been discussing the question, what makes a good adaptation? Which matters more, the quality of the film itself, or how accurate it is to the book it's based on? Of course, there is some complexity, even difficulty, to these questions. Novels and films are inherently different art forms. To expect a 90-minute film or even a longer TV series to be an exact rendering of every detail of a book is a bit unreasonable. There are also devices used in many novels that are just unfilmable or at least extremely difficult to film satisfactorily. So filmmakers have to get creative, which for me is when it gets exciting. Personally, I've noticed that there tend to be four different types or levels of adaptation, each with varying degrees of exactness or adherence to their source material. And I'd like to note that these are not degrees or measures of quality of an adaptation as a work in its own right, as each of them have their own merits, and every reader has their own expectations and preferences when watching a film or TV adaptation of their favorite book. These four categories are simply a way to make sense of how an adaptation chooses to interpret its source material. And since there are so many of them, I'm going to use adaptations of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice as examples to compare and contrast. First, the museum adaptation. A historical museum exists to preserve and protect historical artifacts and records. To alter them in any way is an egregious offense. A museum is also concerned with placing artifacts and records within their historical context. There may be interpretive works that help place the artifacts in a modern context for visitors, such as signage or brochures, but these works exist outside of the artifact. The artifacts themselves are not altered. In the same way, a museum adaptation is concerned with preserving every possible detail of the book exactly how it exists in the book, just transferred to a film medium. If there was ever a perfect example of a museum adaptation, it is the 1995 TV adaptation of Pride and Prejudice. Nearly every scene from the book, however brief or fleetingly mentioned, has been included, and even some scenes that are not in the book are included. Watching this adaptation to me feels like visiting a museum. Everything is perfectly preserved and fascinating to look at, but we are not allowed to touch. For many fans, this near-perfect preservation makes this adaptation their favorite. Number 2, the artful adaptation. The artful adaptation is where my personal tastes tend to lean. This type of adaptation is most concerned with finding balance between being true to its source material and creating a film that is, well, artful and can stand on its own as a work of art. I like to think of an artful adaptation as a conversation between the book and the audience. Rather than preserving every detail, like the museum adaptation, an artful adaptation finds the essential elements of the source material and interprets them in ways that are meaningful for the audience. The more artful elements are part of what turned a lot of Austen purists off to the 2005 adaptation of Pride and Prejudice. Its aesthetic is grittier but warmer than the 1995 version. its set and costume design less concerned with historical accuracy than with reflecting the characters' personalities and relationships. It also, by necessity, cuts or combines plot points from the novel to fit within its two-hour runtime. This is undeniably an artful film, and the most essential elements of the book are all present and imbued with meaning for modern audiences. Number 3. The Loose Adaptation. We've all seen a movie that we would call a loose adaptation. A film that keeps a few elements, or some semblance of the premise of the book it's based on, but then more or less does its own thing with them. This type of adaptation is often discussed in negative terms, as if its lack of exacting similarity to its source material is somehow a failing. And for many people it is, but a loose adaptation can still be a very good movie. 1940 was an interesting time, and in many ways, the adaptation of Pride and Prejudice from that year is typical for the time. The story is sort of there, but plot points have been rearranged or omitted seemingly haphazardly, and arguably unnecessary scenes have been added. The costumes are decidedly more Victorian than Regency. Characters' personalities have even been changed, most noticeably Lady Catherine's. But despite all that, this version is a very enjoyable movie. Number 4. The Transformative Adaptation. We most often see transformative adaptations of well-known classic works from the English literary canon, and most commonly Shakespeare, Austen, and Dickens, as well as some fairy tales such as Cinderella. Transformative adaptations set their source works in a time period other than that in which they were written, often in the contemporary era. They may also be set in a different culture from the source work, or in a subculture of modern, mainstream Western culture. Through changing the setting, transformative adaptations seek to accentuate the timelessness and universality of their source work's messages and themes. They can also be useful for commenting on the traditional whiteness and heteronormativity of literary canon. And while setting a Shakespeare adaptation in a non-European culture and casting actors of color should never serve as a replacement for elevating actual works from that culture, but it can serve as a bridge. Austen works in general, and Pride and Prejudice in particular, probably have the most transformative adaptations of any author or work. Pride and Prejudice sets the story in a modern 2004 India, Britain, and the US, turning Elizabeth and Darcy's class differences from the original novel into a clash of cultures as well. Pride and Prejudice Atlanta casts the Bennets as an African-American family in modern-day Atlanta, with Darcy and Elizabeth as a politician and an activist, respectively, who clash over politics and miscommunications. And The Lizzie Bennet Diaries, definitely one of the most innovative adaptations, takes the form of Lizzie's vlog, which she creates as a final thesis for her master's degree in communications. All three of these examples retain the essentials of the book, but introduce new significance to the themes through viewing them with fresh eyes. I believe that each of these four styles of literary adaptation has its place and value. We may prefer one type over the others, and that preference may even vary from work to work. But each type is equally valid. Which style of literary adaptation do you prefer? What, for you, makes a good adaptation? And now, since I have some extra recording time. As a treat, here are some spooky literary adaptations to watch this Halloween season. Because if you know me well, you know autumn is my favorite time of year. Come September, I am trash for all things pumpkin spice. My boot collection makes its way out of my closet, and I find myself wanting to get cozy at home with a cup of cocoa and a spooky read or a spooky adaptation. So here are a few movies and series that I recommend watching while snuggled under a blanket during a thunderstorm, preferably while a pie bakes in the oven. The flavor of pie is up to you. For movies, definitely watch We Have Always Lived in the Castle. Based on the Shirley Jackson novel of the same name, this 2018 film strikes a perfect balance of creepiness and mystery. You know from the beginning that all is not right with the Blackwood sisters, but you don't know until the end, unless you've read the book, the full extent of the secrets they're keeping in their isolated, crumbling mansion. Extra points for beautiful 1960s costuming. Next up, Sleepy Hollow. I don't know if this is what Washington Irving had in mind when he wrote his short story, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, but this 1999 Tim Burton flick is a lot of pure campy fun. Christina Ricci's black and white striped dress is a highlight, of course, even though we know it's not historically accurate. It's so beautiful, though, we give it a pass. And of course, a staple of spooky season, Practical Magic. Reviews were mixed for this 1998 adaptation of Alice Hoffman's novel about two sisters raised in a family of witches, where the women have secrets and a curse. The film has achieved cult classic status at this point, and of course, Nicole Kidman and Sandra Bullock are always perfect. Fun fact, this movie was shot in Coopville, a town in the San Juan Islands in my home state of Washington. And I have to recommend the adaptation of The Girl with All the Gifts. M.R. Carey's unique take on the zombie novel was translated pretty flawlessly into this 2017 film. Our protagonist and guide through the world is Melanie, a 10-year-old girl who is not everything she seems at first. She is much more. Seriously, this is just so, so good. And for the last movie on my list, Northanger Abbey. So this isn't spooky per se, but Jane Austen's parody of the Gothic novel and all the spooky tropes that go along with it has long been my favorite book. The 2007 BBC made-for-TV movie is the best adaptation I've seen, though that's not saying a lot, as the only other one that I have watched all the way through is the Wishbone episode, which you can watch on YouTube, by the way. As for TV series, I have to start with A Discovery of Witches. I've written about this series before on the blog, but if you don't feel like reading those posts, this series pretty faithfully adapts the first book of Deborah Harkness's All Souls trilogy, which is also titled A Discovery of Witches. It's the story of a witch who's been suppressing her magic for decades in order to pursue her career as a historian, but one fateful discovery of witches sets her down a path toward growing into her full power in order to save the world. Next, The Haunting of Hill House. I have not watched this series yet, though I have watched the recently released The Haunting of Bly Manor, which is produced by the same team and is an adaptation of Henry James' The Turn of the Screw. And I've heard great things about Haunting of Hill House. I'm still planning to watch it eventually. The first season is based on another Shirley Jackson novel of the same name, and it follows a family as they relive memories of the frightening occurrences in their childhood home. Of course, I have to talk about Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. The series is based on Roberto Aguirre Sacasa and Robert Hack's darker take on the classic Sabrina the Teenage Witch comic series, and follows Sabrina Spellman through her first year at the Academy of the Unseen Arts, a school for young witches. Rounding out my list is Frankenstein M.D. Given the success of the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, it's no surprise that the period between 2012 and 2016 saw dozens of literary web series adaptations. One of the more unique of these was 2014's Frankenstein M.D. by PBS Studios. That's right, PBS got in on the action. Victor Frankenstein is now Victoria Frankenstein, a med student researching electrophysiology, or the effects of electricity on the human brain and heart, along with her faithful assistant, Iggy. So what are you watching this October, this spooky season? Are there any spooky literary adaptations that are your favorites? Be sure to let me know and read more of my bookish thoughts at rondawithabook.com. Get exclusive bonus content through my Patreon. And give me a follow on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Thanks for listening. And as always, happy reading.